Welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. Imagine the world. That's what Hay Festival invites readers and writers to do together. As the event celebrates its 30th anniversary from May the 25th to June the 4th this year, the festival will inspire, examine and entertain, inviting participants to imagine the world as it is and as it might be. The lineup includes life-changing writers, stars of stage and screen, pioneers of science and technology, and future world leaders who converge for a party of ideas and stories in 800 events. In the May edition of our Monocle magazine, we looked at how and why the festival works. And in this special edition of Meet the Writers, recorded at the Hay at 30 launch event in London, I talked to some of the people who'll be featured at this year's festival, which takes place in a tented village at Hay-on-Wye, on the edge of the beautiful Brecon Beacons National Park in Wales. First, let me introduce you to Peter Florence, the director and co-founder of Hay, who speaks about this year's special 30th anniversary theme.
We happen to sit in the same year as the 500th anniversary of the moment that Martin Luther may, or indeed may not, have nailed his 95 Theses to the door in Wittenberg. And we wanted to address, take down, attack, propose some reformations of other institutions and authorities. And we commissioned 30 writers from around the world to look at big ideas that need maybe reshaping. Not politicians, by and large. There's one politician so far who's included, who is Saida Warsi, whose subject for reformation is religious integration into society. But we looked at big ideas like marriage and honour, where Jeanette Winterson and Elif Shafak are going to, in our 30-minute opinion piece, readdress some of these big issues. And then we're also looking at the great institutions, the NHS, the idea of education in this country. We wanted to try and get experts, those much maligned but actually objectively intelligent people who know stuff, to look without political agenda at how life might be made better. So that's the overarching theme. The other is just celebration. Now, it's a wonderful moment for people to engage with big ideas. The world seems as if it's in this rupture of political turmoil, but actually there's a huge degree of constancy and we still need people to think it better and dream it better and imagine it better.
Mm. There are a number of other things that you're doing to mark the 30th anniversary. So, for instance, I know that you're releasing a book of 30 of the best talks over the last 30 years.
It's an incredibly exciting anthology. We've been copy editing it, which seems like for months. But there are transcriptions of some of the lectures which are, and conversations and interviews, which are just so lucid, so articulate, so eloquent. There are lots of political ideas, of course, but actually most of all it's about love and death and about how you live. And writers who can tell those truths are, to be treasured. And they just reaffirm humanity and give you a great deal of hope, actually, about how you might live better.
Staying on the theme of 30, I know you've also identified 30 books over the last 30 years that deserve a wider readership.
Yeah, we were trying to work out how to frame this, and actually they're books that we love that we really hope more people will discover. And some of them are actually quite, you know, successful, I mean, hugely successful, but still are not on everybody's bookshelf. We'd love these stories to be shared, and I came up with 15 of them, which I have kind of discovered over the last 30 years, and the audience are coming up with the other 15. It's extraordinarily important to people that their stories get to reach other people in the way they've reached them.
Why do you think it is so important to us that other people love the books we love?
Well, partly because the whole project of literature is about other people. I mean, more than any other art form, it's the way in which we have invented to allow ourselves to see the world as other people see it, through other people's eyes and from other people's perspectives. And, you know, cinema, art music doesn't quite do that. They all do other wonderful things, but they don't do that. And it's like an act, giving somebody a book is like an act of love. It's like saying, this knows me and recognises me, and I would love you too. So I hope we can find common ground in this story. And that's an amazingly intimate thing to do. And so we're trying to encourage 120,000 people to do it together.
Peter Florence, co-founder and director of Hay. Doing it together, this great act of community, is one of the key components of the event. I asked the comic novelist and Man Booker Prize winner, Howard Jacobson, why so many feel such loyalty to the festival.
It's the first and the greatest of this new phenomenon, the literary festival. And because of that, one feels a particular fidelity to it. And it's got everything you want a festival to have. It's away from town. So you go off into the country. With a little bit of luck, the sun shines, and even if it doesn't, there are green fields. I went to Hay on Wye when I was a teenager with a friend with whom I competed at collecting books. Each wanted to have more books than the other. We'd heard that Hay was a book town, so we came to buy books, as many books as we could cram into our satchels. So Hay had a book association with me before there was even a festival. Then I was invited to it in its very early days. And I was very thrilled because I don't think I had been invited to anything like that previously. I'd only just written my first book or two. Suddenly I was at this in the country to talk about literature to people.
What's been your most memorable Hay experience over the last few years?
Hay has a prize, a Bollinger Everyman Woodhouse Prize for comic writing. And the first one was in the year 2000, I think, and I won it. And I've won it since. At the moment, I am the only person to have won this. Not boasting, it just happens to be the case that I am the only person to have won the Bollinger Everyman Woodhouse Prize for comic writing twice. And it's a fun prize in that you are presented with a pig in honour of P.G. Woodhouse, who wrote about pigs. And you become, you're photographed with the pig.
You don't take it home.
Yeah, I thought at first I was going to have to take it home, and I thought I'd better check with my wife. We live in Soho. We don't have a garden. We have a terrace. I said, maybe we could make a little bit of room for, I don't know what pigs live on. I tried to argue the case for a pig on the terrace, thinking it might be a piglet or something, and then we could keep it for a little while. But my wife said, no, we were not going to have a pig. So you don't keep it, but you give it the name of your book.
Another winner of the Bollinger Everyman Woodhouse Award, and therefore pig recipient, is Hannah Rothschild, writer, philanthropist, and documentary filmmaker.
Oh, a pig! My pig, yes. I call my pig kosher, because I'm a nice Jewish girl. I was told I could bring the pig home, and it was about the only thing that I've ever done, which my children were genuinely excited about. They thought they'd have this cuddly pig would come back home, but in fact, the pig, I'm happy to say, stays in a very nice field in the middle of Wales.
And you visit it from time to time, do you?
I sort of look forward to seeing my pig this year, where unfortunately I think he may be reassigned to another winner, though.
Hannah, you've been involved, of course, with Hay for many, many years. You're a vice president?
I am. I'm a vice president, yes. Which I mean, it used to, there are quite a lot of us now, but it's one of those accolades which I wear with honour. Not literally, but you know, I'm very proud to be a vice president.
Yeah. So in your many visits, has there been one in particular that stood out?
Oh my goodness, you couldn't possibly pick up one, because each year there seems to be an extraordinary drama or excitement. Let me try and think of some good stories. So, I mean, we had that moment when Jane Fonda, do you remember, who'd campaigned against Robert McNamara, who thought that he'd brought about, you know, these appalling American wars, and she came face to face with him in the green room, and we all waited to see whether she'd high kick him, you know, in her kind of spandex shorts and attack him. And of course, she was rather charmed. And Paul McNamara, having got through that particular ordeal, that night went into what he thought was his bathroom in his underpants to bump straight into Rosie Boycott, who was wearing rather less than he was. So, I mean, that is a typical Hay kind of, you know, conflagration, I should say.
Yeah. Why do you think it works so well?
I think it's partly because we're taken out of our comfort zone and we're put in a kind of field, effectively, in the middle of Wales, well, not quite in the middle, but kind of getting towards the middle. There's no phone reception, there's no internet, and you are literally put into a kind of secret world. And then you wander from event to event and listening to people who you'd never, ever listened to before. I mean, I would never get to meet a snake charmer, you know, in any other life. You know? I would never hear Terry Jones talking about Chaucer. I would never hear somebody talking about the stars. You know, I might well go and listen to Howard Jacobson or Martin Amis. They're much more in my comfort zone. But I think what happens, you're taken out of your own kind of milieu and you're put into this extraordinary environment and introduced to people and disciplines that you can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm. So what will you be talking about this year?
Oh, I'm not talking. It's fantastic. I'm interviewing. And I'm sitting on various panels. But I have done. It's been a very, very important place for me personally, because in the first instance, it gave me the confidence to write. Because I sat there year after year looking at, admittedly, very extraordinary people who seemed rather ordinary in their own ways. And I thought, well, do you know, maybe, possibly I could try that. I don't know. And it did give me the courage, and it gave me a few tools as well. And so when I wrote my first book, The Baroness, I went and presented it at Hay. And of course, when I wrote my novel, The Improbability of Love, it was the first place I took it to. So it's been both a source of inspiration and, in a way, the kind of full stop at the end of the end, really, to take it to Hay.
Hannah Rothschild, who was inspired by Hay to write. Hay has that effect, taking on a mythical status for some, not least Philippe Sands. He's the author of 16 books on international law. His latest work, East West Street, was published in May 2016 and awarded the Bailey Gifford Prize for non-fiction. He remembers a time when all that seemed unattainable.
Back in 2005, when I was a teenager, Hay was just, you know, up there with the gods. Now that I've been on the inside for the past 12 years, and I'm a vice president, mm-hmm. well, one of thousands, mm-hmm. I know how the reality is, so I'm more relaxed about it.
Now, you, like me, moderate events, as you were saying. What is it you think that makes a good moderator?
People have to be entertained. The audience is high-end in the sense that they are people who read, who think. They are across the political spectrum, so I think one of the things that's important in an event, which are often about politics, is that, you know, it's not a place for clobbering people. It's a place for encouraging people to open up. And the magical interview is the interview where someone says something unexpected. And, for example, I interviewed Jimmy Carter a few years back, and it was at the time that George W. Bush had decided to embrace torture. I'd written a book, actually, about torture in the Bush administration. And I asked Jimmy Carter whether he thought George W. Bush should be investigated for the international crime of torture. And I'd pointed out to him the Pinochet principle, and Bush couldn't go travelling and everything anymore outside the United States. And Carter was terrific. He just looked at me and very wryly he said, "I wish President Bush a long and happy retirement inside the United States." It was a very subtle way of saying, I don't think he should be indicted, arrested, interfered with outside the United States, but equally I don't think he should be travelling outside the United States. It was very subtle, unexpected, and interesting for that. It's those tiny unexpected moments. A really good interviewee, someone who's smarter than you, who's quicker than you, who's ahead of you. There's little preparation. The interviewees, in my case, don't get the questions in advance. And when I'm being interviewed, I don't want to know in advance what I'm going to be asked. It's the spontaneity, it's the unexpected, it's the intimacy that makes a session really interesting. Mm.
And of course, you'll be talking about your own book, East West Street.
I will this year. I'm very excited. Actually, I'm deeply excited. Even my kids are excited because I'm being interviewed by Stephen Fry, which is a sort of a dream because he is very smart, very interested in the subject matter that I've written about, which is about the human condition. He has his own connections with these kinds of events and circumstances, and I'm truly looking forward to it. We have had no preparation. I doubt we'll have any preparation. We're dealing with a very serious and dark issue, but we also have to get people to think and to laugh a bit. Then everyone relaxes.
Philippe Sands, who'll be in conversation with Stephen Fry, who's the president of Hay. Tackling issues with similar weight is Elif Shafak, Turkish author, columnist, speaker and academic. She's been called Turkey's most popular female writer. She's published 15 books, 10 of which are novels. I asked her how the current political situation is affecting her.
I feel so fragmented deep inside, you know. It's a very difficult time for Turkish journalists primarily. I think journalism is the most difficult profession in Turkey. But also for writers, novelists, poets, academics, intellectuals, for the literati in general, I think it is very dark, depressing time. And when I say time, this has been going on for a long, long time, but now it's much worse. As you know, Turkey has become the world's biggest jailer of journalists. So many journalists are imprisoned, more than 150. Others have been detained, blacklisted. Thousands of academics have lost their jobs, sacked. And in general, there's a climate of intimidation which reminds us every day that words are heavy and words can put you into trouble. Mm. So against this background, I think it's every Turkish writer, journalist or novelist knows that because of a tweet, of a poem, of a book, you can so easily get into trouble, which ironically perhaps makes you appreciate more words and the power of words and the power of storytelling. Mm.
And a place like Hay, where of course you can come and say anything.
Yes, of course. The contrast is amazing. It's very clear to me. And perhaps some of my fellow British writers or Welsh writers or Irish writers, maybe they take that freedom for granted. When you come from a country such as Turkey, you don't take it for granted. And I appreciate enormously both the freedom that I find at Hay Festival, but also the diversity of voices, interpretations, the exchange of ideas, and that intellectual dynamism matters a lot to me. I appreciate that. Mm.
What will you be talking about this year?
I think when you're a writer from a country such as Turkey, you can't avoid politics. So there will be political discussions as well with regards to what's happening in Turkey, in the Middle East, but also in the world about populism, the rise of nationalism, the rise of what I call tribalism, this teaching that tells us we all belong in our tribes, which I find very dangerous. So I will be talking about politics. I will primarily be talking about the art of storytelling, my new book, The Three Daughters of Eve. I will be talking about the dance of faith and doubt, and perhaps this longing that I have for a more humanistic, nomadic language that can transcend national, religious, ethnic and class boundaries.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you one question, which I'm afraid is very frivolous, but you're an incredibly elegant woman and it's very difficult to know what to pack for Hay because the weather is always all over the place. How do you what's the ideal way to dress for Hay?
You know, I always make this mistake. I always forget, somehow manage to forget how rainy and windy it can be. It's gorgeous. I love the rain. I love that. It's so natural, it's so fluid, the entire environment in Hay. But of course, you have to be careful about what you put in your suitcase. Definitely, you should have your boots on. You should have your raincoats. Just keep in mind that the weather can change and keep checking the weather until the night before when you will be traveling. And no matter how the weather comes along, just enjoy it because it's a precious environment for sure.
And of course, always have a sparkly party frock.
that is a must.
Elif Shafak, the Turkish writer. Hay, of course, doesn't only take place in Wales. There are offshoots in various parts of the world. Several in Colombia, there's one in Mexico, in Peru, in Segovia, in Spain, in Denmark. There have also been festivals in Kenya, in Beirut, and in Bangladesh, which is where the Bengali-British writer Tamima Annam comes from.
Actually, the standout story about Hay doesn't take place in Wales. It takes place in my hometown, which is Dhaka, Bangladesh. Because in 2011, Hay came to Dhaka, and it was a complete surprise. So I got a call, sort of in July, from someone, from Lindy, the Hay Festival, and she said, "We want to come to Bangladesh. What do you think?" And of course, my intuition was, please don't come. It's going to be a disaster. I won't be able to, you know, make it as interesting and fun and vibrant as the Hay Festival should be, because there's so little time. But they came anyway, And it was, they came for 18 hours, arrived at 5 a.m. and left kind of 3 a.m. the next day. And it was incredible. We had a tiny festival for one day. Lots of people showed up, students, university professors, poets. It was really magical. And it was a festival that it now continues, has a different name, but it's ongoing. So that was kind of an incredible moment for the city. And for me, realizing that actually, I could look at my city in a slightly different light, as a place of literature and poetry, not just as the shabby old city that I had always slightly been embarrassed of.
Yeah. And in terms of Hay Wales, what is it about that that really captures your imagination?
I think it's a combination of the kind of democratization of storytelling. So people getting a chance to speak face to face with people they've only seen on the page, relating to those writers and thinkers as people. It's just, for me, when I've seen people in the audience that I've long admired, it just brings the whole thing alive. It brings the whole process of storytelling alive. The best sessions are often very funny, where a writer that you may have read in a lot of seriousness and felt possibly even intimidated by, even as you read their work, comes out and is a full human being in all their kind of foibles and idiosyncrasies. So I just think there's a real magic there, and the audiences are always incredible, as they were in Dhaka, amazingly.
What will you be talking about this year?
I'm going to be talking about reimagining borders. So how we can reimagine international borders as not as places of fear and exclusion, but as places of welcome and of people kind of moving between one country and another in a mode of friendliness and collaboration. I know that sounds completely like idealistic and unrealistic in the world that we live in today, but we were asked to imagine different futures for the world, and that's my future.
Tamima Annam, whose literary future is extremely bright. Her first novel, A Golden Age, was the best first book winner of the 2008 Commonwealth Writers' Prize. In 2013, she was included in the grantor list of 20 best young writers. One man whose future was utterly changed by Hay is journalist, documentary maker and broadcaster Safraz Manzoor.
I mean, I've been going to Hay, I was trying to work it out, I think it's my 12th year in succession that I'm going to be going. And each year has, you know, I've kind of been at a different stage in my life. So I initially went I was in my mid-30s and I was in a certain stage. And I mean, the most important Hay for me was the Hay of 2008. And I went in, it was the last week of May, and I was actually in quite a depressed state of mind because I'd recently ended a relationship, a three-year relationship, and I say I ended it. I'm not sure if that's factually true, but it ended, let's just say that. And, you know, I was about to turn 37, I think, and I was just feeling quite sort of down about life. And so I go to the festival, and the great thing I think about the festival is that it's a place where you are constantly stimulated by what's going on around you. So immediately you're kind of taken out of your misery. So the festival was great. And then on the Sunday, coming back to London from the festival, I'm sitting on the train from Hereford Station going back to Paddington, and I find myself sitting opposite a woman. And she's, you know, hugely attractive and way out of my league. But the train journey, as you probably know, is quite a long one from Paddington. It takes something like 3.5 hours. So being a bit of a fast mover, after about 2 hours, I said hello. And so we started talking, and what was interesting was that Hay became a unifying thing, because I saw that she had a cloth bag with the Hay Festival logo on it. So I knew she'd been there. That meant there was an easy way to talk. And we could talk about some similarities, about the things that we had in common, which was about books and being interested in ideas. That led me to rather cheekily ask if I could see her again. And we managed to have a date the following Saturday. And this was on June the 7th of 2008. And 2 years, 2 months and 2 weeks after that first date, we got married.
It's such a lovely story.
And it's kind of a crazy thing, because it's one of those things that, you know, it's in my past and I think about it. Then every so often, I see my two kids and I think they wouldn't exist without that random encounter. And again, freshly becomes nuts to me, and freshly sort of reminds me of the magic of as you say, of running into things and of fortune and fate.
Yeah, yeah. And what's great is, of course, I see you there every year and at various festivals with your children. First, just with your wife, then with your daughter. And now, for the first time, you'll be bringing your son along
too. My little boy as well, yeah. And the thing about Peter's point about it being sort of, you know, a community is a really good one, because one of the things I like about Hay is because there aren't that many other things to do, it's not done in sort of a big city where you can go off and do loads of other things. It means that there isn't some hierarchy or anything. You are running into people the whole time. And the other thing that's interesting is that one grows with the festival. So there are parts of the festival which completely passed me by when I didn't have kids, because there was obviously no interest in knowing about them. I now know about, you know, the genius of Julia Donaldson in a way that I didn't before.
Safraz Manzoor, author of Welcome to Berry Park, who's now well acquainted with Julia Donaldson and other children's authors, because, of course, there's an extensive programme for kids at Hay too. One huge star of that world, who draws enormous crowds of under-10s, is Cressida Cowell. She's best known for her novel series How to Train Your Dragon and the subsequent films.
I was giving a talk to a huge audience, and this little boy, about 6, stuck up his hand. And he was quivering with excitement. He was clearly so engaged with the book, which I loved anyway, that he said, so if and why does the Dragon Furious want to kill Hiccup? These are characters in my books. Because he liked both the Dragon Furious and Hiccup. Why does he want to kill Hiccup? And I went into quite a complicated answer to a 6-year-old, because you must never underestimate 6-year-olds, about fate and about how the Dragon Furious had looked into the future, and he didn't really have anything against Hiccup personally. And I was, you know, saying, but can we cheat fate? I was asking these questions. And this little boy was so excited by the answer that he rushed up on stage and he grabbed the microphone from me and he explained to the audience. He said, it's not that the Dragon Furious has anything in for Hiccup, and it's not... He explained the complicated thing about fate, and he just wanted to communicate to the audience this answer that had satisfied him so much. And then the audience erupted with cheering, and he then went off the stage and back to his seat. But what was so exciting about that was that the 6-year-old, he'd engaged with the story so much, and the whole audience there had shared this experience of this little boy getting an answer to the question that he really wanted. And that boy, I hope, you know, will be a reader of the future. We've helped create a reader of the future.
Cressida Cowell, who'll be just one of the many, many people celebrating readers past, present and future, as well as writers and thinkers, scientists, performers and, yes, even pigs, at the 10-day Party of Ideas in Wales later this month. See you there. My thanks to all the guests on the show today. You can hear them in person at the festival in the book town of Hay-on-Wye from May the 25th to June the 4th. More details can be found at hayfestival.org, and you can read about how hay is made in the May issue of Monocle. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Thanks to the production team of Claire Urban and Hunter Charlton. Thanks also to Daisy Leach of 5i15 and Christopher Bone of Hay Festival, and of course, all of the authors. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.